101.7 FM, 710 KEEL, Mikey McCarty on the Jenks Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline. State Rep. Michael Mellorine joining us. Michael, good morning. Thanks for jumping on with us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Well, Governor Landry has issued an executive order saying teacher pay raise. They have to have a $2,000 at least a stipend. Caddo Parish, we talked with Keith Burton, and they've proposed a 6% pay raise in the budget. How are you going to be voting on this executive order for the governor? Because I think we're covered.
Yeah, and so I already voted. Just to let everybody know, I voted yes. And Superintendent Burton and I spoke yesterday exactly about what you just raised. And I want to applaud him and the school board, first off, for doing this. For acknowledging our teachers are very important and the backbone of the education system, and for them seeing that and finding a way to give them a raise.
There is questions about, I think DeSoto's given a raise. I think Bossier may have done one last year. What's the timing on if you've given a raise, since what date do you meet this criteria? There's a little bit confusion about that.
Yes, you're right. There is some confusion, but that's exactly what Superintendent Burton and I spoke about yesterday. And we had a conversation with the governor yesterday about this as well. For DeSoto and for Caddo, who have announced that they've not done it, or they will implement for the upcoming school year, but have not done it yet, they're satisfied. So essentially, if you didn't have it last year, but you're doing it next year, then you're covered, is the gist of it.
Okay. So essentially, Caddo will not have to cut their budget. They can give the raise that they were planning to give and then move on. So that this will be a permanent raise rather than a stipend. And is that something you support? I mean, I know you hear from teachers all the time, stop giving us stipends, give us a real raise.
Yeah, look, I think the permanent raise, to answer your first question, yes, I support Caddo Parish School Board giving their teachers a permanent raise. When it comes to the state, I think what we need to do is exactly what we're doing. We're looking going forward at the MFP, which is the state formula and how the state funds local school districts. That needs to be addressed. We have not looked at that since the early 90s. And when we looked at it in the early 90s, it was more of a tweak. So realistically, we've not had a comprehensive review and potential change in addressing where we're at as a state funding local education in more than 30 years, probably closer to 50 years. We need to do that.
What would you like to see different from the MFP funding?
That's what we need to look at. So right now, we fund, there's multiple levels. Level one is the funding per pupil. Mm-hmm. If you talk to most school systems, that has not been changed, or that has not had money added to it in a very long time. And if you look around the country, most states, when they're funding their education systems at a local level, are funding at that per pupil basis. So to explain it, that means this. If the state gives you X amount of dollars, say it's $5,000 for every student you have in your system, that's level one. So if your population goes up, you get more funding. If your population decreases, you get less funding. Louisiana has that, but most of the funding is not there. Most of the funding is in these levels 2, 3, 4, 5. And that's baked in no matter what. So if your population explodes, you don't necessarily get more funding at those levels. And if your population collapses, you don't get any less funding. So that's where some of those inefficiencies, and most of the inefficiencies are, and that's what we need to look at, is that's things such as English language learners. You've heard a lot of people talk about, we fund English language learners at a much higher level than other students. So that's something that we need to look at. Also, you need to look at your special education students. Are they getting enough? Are they not getting enough? It's all of those different things, not just your normal, this is the student population count, that we need to go in and determine, is this the best use of the state tax dollars?
The other question that is raised with regard to the governor's executive order and you know, demanding the stipend be paid is, at what's the happy medium for how the state tells us each district how to spend their money? You send the money per pupil, and then for the most part, the districts determine how to spend the money. some are saying this might be state overreach. You would disagree, I guess.
I think in the short term, look, we, as a state legislature, for the past 2 years, we've given the population the opportunity to approve a state, like a teacher pay raise. It failed. At this point in time, on a one-year basis, we're coming in and saying, look, this failed at the ballot twice. We're trying to keep the teachers from having that stipend that they've received the past 3 or 4 years, no longer received for this year. And this was the solution when the speaker and everybody came up with. We're voting on it as a legislature. I support it personally. I don't think this is a long-term solution, but I think for 1 year, this is the best shot that we have at doing this.
So you think it'll pass? It needs a two-thirds majority.
It does. Right. It needs a two-thirds majority. Talking to colleagues, a lot of them are supportive of it. Whether we get to that two-thirds, look, a lot of people, in, especially in your rural communities, have questions about the impact it's going to have on them. And I know those conversations are being had right now. But to go back to Caddo, once they said you're fine with having that 6% that you've already announced covered it, and it wasn't going to result in any, for this year, any negative impact on Caddo Parish, I'm fine with it for Caddo Parish.
The other problem with it is the timing, because most of these school districts are passing their budget right now, and this would change their budget dramatically. Yeah. Like on June 24th, well, which budgets go into effect? That's a little bit of a struggle for a lot of these parishes, correct?
It can be, yeah. Look, to acknowledge it, yeah. That could be a struggle for some of these parishes. I know LDOE is working with a lot of the school systems, especially the ones that have expressed concerns. But yeah, to acknowledge it, yeah, that is a potential issue for some school districts.
Well, you expect then that you guys will start working on legislation next year to address the MFP funding and a restructuring of that, it sounds like?
It's coming probably next month. It's going to start. Around the same time, the governor issued an executive order for the teacher stipend. We passed a joint resolution of the House and Senate to put together a task force of stakeholders from not just the legislature, but also from DOE and local school systems and other, to look at the formula and to see what we can do to modernize it and to update it and to make sure that essentially we're getting the best bang for our buck, that we're not wasting money. It's a $4 billion piece of the budget, or almost $5 billion piece of the budget. That's a lot of money.
Yeah, and pretty substantial.
We need to make sure that we're not wasting it. Yeah. We need to make sure that we're not wasting this, because, look, from the time that I was on BSEE, so go back 5 years, until now, we went from 49th in education to 32nd. That's not by happenstance. That was the result of a lot of hard work from everybody, from the legislature down to local school boards and especially teachers. And we need to make sure that whatever we do, we don't hinder those results. Because right now what we're seeing is, looking in Northeast Louisiana at Meta. Meta just announced that they're starting basically a CTE program that trains individuals and guarantees them a job, a good paying job. We have the data centers here, whether you agree with them or not, they're coming here right now and they're going to need an educated workforce. And that educated workforce isn't necessarily somebody that went to a four-year college. It's somebody that can go to high school, get out of high school, and go straight to work, making a good salary. But in order to do that, we have to have a student population that can read, that can do basic math, and that is starting. We're starting to see that now in Louisiana, and we're going to continue that. Now, we can't take away the funding, and we can't take away the opportunities from those students that we've given them in the past 5 years. So that needs to be the North Star. Whatever we do is to make sure that we improve outcomes for students.
Mm-hmm. Great stuff. We'll keep in touch, because this is going to be interesting to watch.
It is. So I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Michael. State Rep. Michael Mellerine. Micah McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710 Keel.
Now more breaking news and trending talk with Mike and McCarty on 1017 FM and 710 Keel.
When did the Caddo Commission sell the clown car to the Caddo School Board? Did they sell the clown car?
And you watched, didn't you?
Yeah, man. Mike, that was embarrassing.
Oh, man.
That was embarrassing.
Just going by what you were telling me, it's
I mean, wow. it was going smoothly.
And these are supposed to be leaders.
Yeah. It was really going along kind of smoothly. They were getting to the pay raise and to the budget. And one of the members of District 1, Steve Umling, had a pretty brilliant idea. I thought it was, and Katie McLean, you know, put out her idea. She talked about, mm-hmm. you know, different pay raise structures, but said it didn't look like the math would math.
And this is the Caddo Parish School Board. Mm-hmm. Let's clarify.
They were debating a 6% across the board pay raise. After hearing from employee after employee after employee who came up, who are at the lower end of the scale, and said, we need more. We make $30,000. This is not enough. You need to do more at the lower end. And a lot of employees came up and said that. Well, Umling had a substitute or an amendment to the budget item, and he said it was a brilliant idea. I'm going to try to get in touch with him. If you know Steve Umling, let him know. I'm going to text him here in a minute, a you up message. But he said, why not bump the pay raise up to 7% and then put a cap, a $5,000 cap? So I did the math. That would mean if you make over 70 grand, you're capped at 5,000. That's all you're going to get. You can't get any more. Superintendent couldn't get the 10 grand. I mean, they would cap his at 10 grand, but everybody else said it makes over 70, you're capped at 5 grand. He said the maths, we might even save money on it. You're giving more to the people at the lower end. I thought, it's a pretty brilliant idea.
Yeah, that actually makes sense.
Well, his motion was ruled by the chair out of order. It wasn't proper. It wasn't properly done or something. And it was challenged by Dr. Vinson, who said, no, I think the motion is in order. And I disagree with you. And so they got the attorney to weigh in. The attorney weighed in, said the motion was in order, that it was a proper motion and was seconded. Well, they got so heated, Mike, that they had to take a break. Took a 5-minute break. It got nasty. And then they come back from the break, and the chairman says, it's my decision. I run the meetings. The motion was out of order.
See, I don't like that.
And that's after the attorney said the motion was in order.
Did they explain what was out of order?
I didn't hear it. If he said it, I didn't hear why the motion was ruled out of order. Okay. So I need to ask him today, too, and he can text me. He's got my number. Clarify why that motion was out of order. I would have liked to have seen a vote on that. Because the way it went down, it looked like we were going to push this 6% because that's what we wanted. That's what we'd already been working on. And we're going to do that hell or high water. And we were not going to consider any alternatives at this point, this late stage in the game. And there was an effort to try to postpone the vote. It got so ridiculous. And I'm sitting there watching, and there's not a whole lot of people left in the meeting because this is now close to 8 o'clock at night. And I'm thinking, the general public doesn't see this nonsense that happens. That, and I know sometimes you've got to fight to reach solutions. I get that. But it just got out of hand. It was crazy.
I may go back and watch now.
Yeah. Watch the last 30
like
minutes.
It might be entertaining.
Last 30 minutes of it's pretty good. Yeah.
Coming up in about 10 minutes, we've got, who do we have here? We've got
Mayor Tom Arsenault.
Oh, that's right. Tom Arsenault.
His reflections on John Hussey.
Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710 Keel, and on the free Keel app.
Back with more of Mike and McCarty on 1017 FM and 710 Keel.
Shreveport Mayor Tom Arsenault remembers former Mayor John Hussey, who recently passed away. Coming up just after the break, Mike and McCarty, 1017 FM, 710Keel.com.
Back to the show with Mike and McCarty on 1017 FM and 710 Keel.
Shreveport Mayor Tom Arsenault Haven't spoken with him in such a long time. I'm glad to get him on the phone.
I know. Finally, yeah.
Good morning.
Mayor, good morning. Former Mayor John Hussey just recently passed away, age 92. He was the first mayor under the then new mayor city council form of government.
Actually, he was the second mayor. Bill Hanna was the first.
Okay.
Awesome. Okay, well, then the report I saw got it wrong.
Yeah, because he was elected in 1980, right?
A lot of people forget that we had two really big contributors in the early years of our new form of government, and Bill was mayor from 78 to 82. John was on the council, on that first council, and then John became mayor from 82 to 90.
I moved here in 84. He was mayor at the time. I don't know that I've ever met a more gracious. I was a 21-year-old little green little reporter. He was just a kind soul. That's the best way to describe him.
Yeah, John was John's personality would cause you to think that he didn't have any that he was very quiet, and so you sometimes don't associate a quiet person with aspects of leadership. But John was very much a leader. He led by what he did and by his vision and his real commitment to service to the people of Shreveport.
You served on the council during the years he was mayor, in 82, I believe, to 90 as well. So you worked closely with him.
I did.
Those were some turbulent times in our community. We had, gangs. We had a riot in Cedar Grove. We had lots of struggles, but we were flooded. We were doing good money-wise. What were the biggest struggles that you saw him face?
Well, we really had a real... Our two terms were very, very different. The first term, we were flush with cash, and we got to say yes to everybody,
right.
Basically. In the second term, the price of oil dropped from $40 a barrel to $10 a barrel, mm-hmm. In a period of about 120 days. Lumber prices dropped, and so we went through a serious recession. And so between 86 and 90 is when we learned a lot about government, because we had to make some very difficult budgetary decisions that affected services and those kind of things. So we learned a lot about government in that second term. And John handled both of those circumstances exceptionally well. He was very good at setting priorities. He managed to get funding for things like the Clyde Fan Parkway and to do that streetscape downtown. John was just he was a real visionary, and then he was also tough enough to make difficult priority decisions when federal revenue sharing stopped, which was a very significant blow to our budget. And like I say, he really was a thoughtful leader. John always thought what was the right thing to do, and then he would figure out what was the political thing to do to bring that about so that the right thing became the right decision.
Mayor, I know you stayed in touch with Mayor Hussey, former Mayor Hussey. Did you ever seek counsel as mayor?
Oh, yes. I sought counsel several times. I remember in particular, as I got into the role, but I've been in the office a month or two, and I realized that I needed some mentoring on who to see, how to structure my day. And so I took John to lunch. Actually, I intended to take John to lunch. He ended up taking me to lunch. And we sat down, and he recommended a book that he said was kind of his guide to how to manage his position. It was a book that is by management guru Peter Drucker, and it's called the Effective Executive. And so I immediately, if John said that was the book to read, I went and got it, and that has helped me a lot in setting my daily schedule as mayor. But I met with John several times, called him on occasion when I was, you know, trying to figure out how to address a particular problem. And John had a very keen political insight as well as a very keen policy insight. And people didn't always see that in John, because he was a very quiet, he had a very quiet personality. But make no mistake about it, we have lost a lion in Shreveport.
Do you know, I may not be able to share, but he was out and about as 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. Do you know anything about the circumstances of his death that you can share? The family?
No, I've had some very brief text exchanges with his son, Brennan, who is a friend, but I just left that. Left that to them. I'm sure some of those details will come out. I think he had been in rehab. He'd had a fall several months ago. And I did notice the last time I was at the symphony, I know where John C. is, and I noticed that he was not there, and that concerned me.
Mm.
Well, he was 92.
What a long life. I remember when we were talking about the Clyde Fant Parkway, and the discussions were hot and heavy on that. And little known, we don't realize it today, but there was a hot and heavy debate about keeping billboards off of that roadway. And John was in the middle of saying he wanted that to be a green space thoroughfare. And so when you drive on the Clyde Fant Parkway today and you don't see billboards for lawyers or whoever, it's because of John Hussey. He led that charge, correct?
He did. He did. You know, John was, when John believed something, he was very, firm. And most of the time I was with John on those occasions. When I wasn't with John, I felt his influence.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And the other thing was the Cedar Grove riots of 1988. I cannot explain to you enough how his calm demeanor during that tumultuous time, I was in awe just watching him as a young reporter. I thought, man, he brought the community together. It was a tough time. But he led that effort to kind of bring our city back. I'm sure you saw that too.
Well, I did, and it really is a lesson. Is a lesson for any mayor. It is certainly a lesson for me, and that is when you have a crisis in your community, whatever it is, it's very important that the mayor remain cool, calm, and collected, because a mayor can either incite further difficulties, mm-hmm. or can begin, okay, what are our issues? What do we need to focus on? How do I go about focusing on it? What's the first step? What's the step after that? And John was methodical in that, and his calm, I can tell you that John did have the ability to get angry, but you never saw his anger on the outside.
Nope.
He always maintained his composure, and as a result of that, things that didn't go well didn't go as badly as they would have had he been an inciting kind of person.
Mm-hmm. And looking at from an outside in, when you were on the council, I watched how he got along with all the council members, no matter what the background. He worked with them. He tried to compromise. He tried to meet them where they were. That to me was in looking back at it, you know, some 40 years later, I'm like, you know what? He really did try hard to work with everyone.
Well, he realized that the best way for the city to progress is for the mayor and the council to act as a team for the city. Now, teams have the ability to have disagreements, mm-hmm. but they all ought to realize that they're on the same team. It's important to move the city in a positive direction. We have to be in agreement on the basic things and act as a team. Now, the council's role is sometimes as a check and balance with the power of the mayor, but the mayor needs to recognize the role of the council, and the council needs to recognize the role of the mayor. John was very firm about that. When he protected the office of the mayor, not himself. Yeah. But he protected the office of the mayor to make sure that the way that the government operated was the way the people intended for it to operate when they passed the new form of government in 1978.
Yep.
Shreveport lost a lion.
You bet.
I like that. Thank you, Mayor. We appreciate your input.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, sir. We'll talk to you soon. Mike, 101.7 FM, 710 Keel.com.
Now more breaking news and trending talk with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
So what was your criteria for determining the 20 most powerful men, and neither Reuben nor I are on the list?
You're not on the list, no.
It's not a legitimate list.
I know. Well, I asked a few people in my circle who they, you know, give me some names, people you think are among the most powerful men in Shreveport. And I'm doing it Father's Day week because many of them are fathers. Some are not, but many of them are fathers. And I thought, you know what? They balance their life in politics or business or religion with their duties as a dad. So I wanted to kind of honor them today.
She said duty.
That's why you're not on the list. But I have bumped a few people off the list from last year. And David Montgomery from Bossier, former city councilman, he was on the list for a long time. Greg Tarver is off the list.
Right, I can see that.
There are a couple of others that have been bumped from the list. But it was kind of a debate among my group of people that I was talking with about who's number one, who's the most powerful man in Shreveport-Bossier. And we were debating, is it the mayor? Is it the sheriff? Is it the district attorney? And then it hit me. Ding, 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 ding.
But
Mike Johnson.
Yes.
Is a no-brainer.
But he's not technically in Shreveport.
Well, he has a home here.
Yeah.
He grew up here. He can get anything done in this city he wants. If you were to say anybody that could pick up a phone today and call and get anything done in Shreveport-Bossier today that they want done, he'd be the guy.
But he doesn't have a very powerful job.
But that made picking number one easy.
Third, like, in line, if you can pick,
you can put Mike Johnson at number one. You know, that was a pretty no-brainer. So my top five, let me scroll down.
And real quick.
People are going to disagree. Number five on the list, Tommy Chandler. James Stewart, 4. Henry Whitehorn, 3. Tom Arseneault, number 2. And Mike Johnson, number 1. Disagree with me? You can post on our Facebook page. Let us know.
We don't have, we get, okay, 1017. We don't have time to debate. 710, Keel, Mike and McCarty. 3. FM, 710 Keel, Micah McCarty on the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline. Got a Parish School Board member, Jasmine Green, joining us. Jasmine, good morning.
How are you this morning?
We are doing very well. Thank you. Kind of things got a little interesting last night in the meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Don't remind me.
talking about teacher and staff pay raises, and seemed like there was a good kind of a compromise proposal that was brought up, but chairman didn't like it. Tell us, where did we leave it? What are we doing now with teacher and staff pay raises?
We voted on a budget yesterday which had the 6% pay raise across the board in it. As far as the pay raise, that was the pay raise for the teacher and staff, but the governor is also supposed to be proposing something. That's why they kind of took away the stipend to see what they proposed, what he would propose. So that's kind of where we are now. But eventually the stipend, we'll be voting on the stipend as soon as we get some information, is what I'm hearing.
You guys are going to probably approve a stipend regardless of what the governor. I mean, it looks like the governor is saying, if you've given a pay raise, you're good. You don't need to do what I'm telling you. But y'all are probably going to do a stipend as well.
Yes, not on top of what the governor says, but
right.
we will do a stipend. Absolutely.
Jasmine, excuse me, Miss Green. I hope Jasmine's okay. But
Jasmine's fine.
I heard Steve Umling's proposal, his amendment. It sounded to me brilliant. 7% across the board pay raise with a cap of 5,000, so that those that made over, I did the math, those that made over 70,000 would be capped at 5 grand. That would give more money to those at the lower end, and those making, you know, really great salaries would not be getting a disproportionate amount of the money.
Makes sense.
You seem to like that. It seemed to make sense. How did it get so haywire?
Well, two things happened that I saw. Number one, we've always had a rule that you're supposed to put your motion on the floor first, and then you come back and speak to that motion. But what he did, he gave a whole spiel before he put the motion on the table. Mm. Now, I'm still doing some research about that and going, I'm going to be talking to the attorney. The attorney said the reason his reasoning for not saying anything is because he's really not in the meeting. So he said nobody stopped him. So that's why nobody stopped Mr. Umling when he put the motion up.
But the attorney ruled his motion was valid, and it was seconded, and it was valid. But your chairman ruled against that.
Yeah, he did, because he felt like he spoke, instead of putting the motion on the floor first, he just did his spiel. He went into his spiel. So there was two difference in opinion.
Okay.
What we need to do is get down to the rules and see exactly what the rules say.
Mm-hmm.
And then another reason why is, with you kind of putting some math on people at the last minute to vote on a budget, they don't feel comfortable with, you know, your numbers.
Right.
So, you know, some people felt like, well, that may sound great, but we may get to the drawing board and it doesn't look as good as it sounds.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, people don't like, you know, having to deal with numbers at the very last minute like that.
But
so
then you then you propose, I believe, let's delay this. Let's pump the brakes and let's do the math on some alternatives, but you weren't able to get support for that. It just sounded reasonable to me. Am I wrong?
No, to me it was reasonable. This is the thing. We have a huge teacher shortage all over America.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so if we want to be attractive as Caddo, to attract great teachers to produce, you know, top of the line children, which we do, you have to make Caddo attractive. And $53,000, a $3,000 bonus versus a $7,000 bonus, I'd be looking more towards the $7,000 than the $3,000.
Sure.
And so you kind of want to look at that middle. And also our paraprofessionals who don't hardly make as much money. You know, you hear stories about them struggling as well. So, you know,
when we spoke,
I kind of want to look out for them.
We spoke to Superintendent Keith Burton a week or so ago. He said staffing was in good shape. Are we losing teachers to other districts?
I can't tell you that all right off the bat, but I can tell you that you hear a lot of talk whether we're losing them, but that, you know, you hear a lot of talk when you go into the grocery stores. Morale's kind of not at its best. And, you know, that's not just in Caddo. It's a lot of places. But where you hear that things are good is where their pay is pretty good. Like you hear DeSoto's giving raises and Bossier's giving raises. And then their working environment is great. And then, you know, the children are doing well. So, you know, all these things tie into, you know, pay isn't the main thing, but it kind of helps drive, you know, us in a great direction as far as the district.
You heard from several paraprofessionals, I think cafeteria workers, school bus drivers, the one after another got up before you, and I know you get their calls too, and they are saying 6% is wonderful, but it's $150 a month for some of these folks. That's not even keeping up with gas prices or egg prices. Right. I mean, they're still struggling. So I don't understand why we're not trying to work harder as a board and find a more fair and equitable raise for those lower echelon folks.
Right, right. And that was my main point in pumping the brakes there, because I was looking to give the pyramid's big at the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And at that bottom, you know, that's where you're spending a lot of those dollars. And eventually we would get them back in sales taxes, because the people that live here, they spend their money here. So we give them a nice little, you know, some nice little monies. If we can raise those money, that would be great. And it's the 6%, to me, it wasn't reasonable, but, you know, we had to go along with it I'd rather them get something than nothing.
Mm-hmm.
But really wish we could have done better.
So it's a done deal. The vote's been cast, and, mm-hmm. and it's a 6% raise.
It's a 6% across the board, from my understanding. Plus, we're going to come back with that stipend.
Okay. Now, the superintendent...
But the stipend doesn't go into salary.
Yes. The superintendent needs... Y'all need to renegotiate his contract for his pay raise to go into effect. And I find it kind of ironic. I mean, I love Mr. Burton. I mean, I think he's doing a wonderful job. But his contract, he gets a 2% raise every year. Teachers right. haven't had a raise in a long time. So are you thinking about, hey, I don't know that we need to give him his 6%. Is that, do you think that there's something like that being talked about on the board?
Well, did you hear when I said what, when Mr. Abrams started talking right before we casted our vote? I was trying to figure out what exactly he was talking about, because that was kind of sprung on me.
Right.
So there's still some questions that I'm going to have with Ms. Attorney Abrams.
Right.
So we'll get a little bit more into that and probably get back with the public as to what we do.
Absolutely. Well, we'll keep in touch and we'll watch what you guys do. Appreciate your time.
All right. Thank you, guys.
You bet.
Thank you so much. Jasmine Green, Kettle Parish School Board member, Mikey McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710 Kiel, and on the free Kiel app. No.
Back to the big stories of the day with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Kiel.
Helps if I turn on my mic.
Yeah, it does.
What a doofus. I'm trying to keep up with my Celtic football club.
How are they doing?
Well, they're not in the World Cup. They have a lot of their players playing for Scotland, though.
Okay. Are you watching?
The Tartan Army.
Yeah.
In Boston. The bars and pubs ran out of beer.
Oh, wow. Wow.
The Tartan Army.
Man.
Drank it all up.
Jeez.
They ran out of beer.
God, that's funny.
one of the pub owners says, I've never seen anything like this.
Wow. That's good. It's just, this soccer's just been amazing.
Aaron, and these people are coming to this country and they're going, are you kidding? This place is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
We lose perspective.
We really do.
We're so busy trashing each other and trashing our country that we forget. First of all, we've got a lot more in common than we do apart.
Yes, definitely.
And... we got it pretty damn good.
You're so right. You're so right.
I mean, this is the best country on the face of the earth,
mm-hmm.
in the history of the world.
Right.
Seriously.
And
literally.
Having spent a little time in Greece, which is, you know, considered part of Europe, I'm telling you, there are things that we do here that we take for granted. That you
100%.
Just, you just don't realize until you go out of the country. Now, yeah, they have things that are better than we have here, a couple of things that I would point to. But for the most part, it's good to get home. It's good to be back home and not have to work. Especially in the South, the friendliest people on the planet are in the South.
I had to go to... Atlantic City one year. This is several years ago for work.
Mm-hmm.
And we were gone for about a week. came back and landed in Atlanta, and we were walking through the terminal, and you hear, "Hey, welcome home." And Lee and I just looked at each other and went, "Oh, we're back in the South."
Yes, exactly.
We stayed at the Trump Plaza in Atlantic City. Nice hotel.
Mm-hmm.
This is way before Trump got back into politics. The restaurant at the Trump Plaza, up in the nice restaurant.
Sure.
I mean, the food was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked the lady, I was looking at the menu, and it was a burger and such and such. And I said, "So how does that come?" And she looked at me and goes, "On a plate?"
Thank you, lady.
It's like, oh, okay.
Gosh, yeah.
We're in New Jersey.
Yeah. When we come back, I did get something in Greece that I want to know if we have here, because I want it again.
Okay.
It's weird. I'm just going to tell you right now, it was weird, but I want it again.
101.7 FM, 710 Keel, Mike and McCarty.
Power of Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
I'm sorry, that's what I would ask.
You've got to ask more important questions than that.
That could be a major tourist attraction.
It could. We're talking
about
that
could be huge.
Talking about Curtis 50 Cent Jackson. His fireside chat is today. Convention Center, 6 o'clock.
Doors open at 4 o'clock.
Yeah, you got to get in because at 6 o'clock the doors are going to close. No more entries after 6 o'clock. And I asked you, you're sitting down. He's 10 feet from you. What do you want to ask Curtis 50 Cent Jackson? Message us, by the way, your questions. I would love to know. But what would you ask? Not about the stupid Ferris wheel.
Why not?
That's actually a good question. Are we really going to get one?
Because it was in a presentation.
Yes.
It was in one of the very first presentations. I want it to be huge.
Mm-hmm.
You can see it from the interstate.
Yes.
And it'll light up in conjunction with the Barkowski Bridge.
Mm-hmm. Would be beautiful.
Yeah.
Overlooking the river, that would be nice. My question to him would be, how will his project, how will it compare to Tyler Perry in Georgia? I mean, is it going to be half scale? Is it going to be close to the same? Is it going to be a third scale? I'd be curious because, I mean, well, Tyler Perry's got 330 acres. It's a big complex.
Right.
It's a former military base.
You're comparing Atlanta and Shreveport.
Yes, absolutely.
Quite the difference.
And where will all the folks be coming from? Is he going to get folks from New York, from Houston, from L.A.? Where are folks coming
in
from?
Hiring local?
We're going to hope to hire local, but as the mayor said, it's great for people to come in.
The mayor brought a great point. I remembered when I had a studio right there by Moonbot, and mm-hmm. I got to do a lot of work with Moonbot Studios,
sure.
Bill Joyce's studios. And they brought in all these animators and artists and they were young.
Yes.
And starting families and you know, investing in the area. And mm-hmm. It was great.
Absolutely. My other question to him today would be, I would like to know what your plan is with all the properties downtown you've purchased.
Yes.
A lot of them are in bad shape. They need a lot of work. When will we see some of that work? What will those buildings be turned into? Are they going to be housing, retail, restaurants? What's the plan? He also talked when he was here a few times prior that we needed a swimming pool downtown. We need some things like that that will attract and keep people downtown. So where's his plan for that?
I hope it's just not all clubs.
It can't be. You got to have an entertainment district. I get that. But you also need something if the folks that are coming in want to have their families.
I'd like to see residential.
Mm-hmm.
Be nice to see a grocery store brought in.
Oh, big time.
You know, movie theater. I mean, just some interesting things, entertainment, but
that will attract folks to downtown.
Attract people, yes.
Absolutely. And that's something that
we do have the Robinson. Don't get me wrong.
Yes, you bet. After 8 o'clock, Cedric Glover's going to join us in studio. And he's going to talk to us about, you know, what his vision for, he's obviously in charge of the DDA. What's his vision for downtown? Does he want it to be more adult-centric? Does he want it to be family-centric? What's the goal and how involved is his organization in this whole 50 Cent plan? I'm curious about that, too.
That's after 8 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710 Keel.
To the show with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
All right, I keep saying I need to get in there. I want to go early vote.
Yeah.
I got to where I like to early vote. I go downtown. It's easy.
Mm-hmm.
Never a line, unfortunately.
No.
The ladies that work in there are super, and you can get in, get out. We got the voters, the voting numbers from yesterday. You know, it's not bad, Aaron. That's not bad.
It's pretty bad.
Well, okay, I'm trying to.
You're putting a little spin. That's good.
Well, I mean, 103 went in. I mean, if you think about that, that's a pretty steady stream going mm-hmm. in for one day. 100 people going in to vote.
The day before, only 48 went. So yesterday was an improvement. At the library, 290 went yesterday, where 127 went the day before. Mail-in, another 428 came in for a total mail-in ballots of 1,086. So we're right at 2,100 early voting right now. This is going to be a dismal turnout. I mean, we just are going to have a dismal.
It really is.
The election day is June 27th. People are going to forget about it. They're going to be doing other stuff. It's summertime. People are on vacations. They're going to forget to vote. And somebody's going to get nominated to become our next U.S. senator from both parties, by the way. With very few votes.
Yeah.
I mean,
when is the actual election?
June 27th.
Mm-hmm. See, I've got an early vote.
A week from Saturday. Yeah, you're going to be gone. Definitely. So you need to vote.
I know.
Absolutely.
Okay. I got to go today.
Right. Yeah, get it done. Are you going downtown or do you go to the library?
I like to go downtown.
Okay.
I'm never out that side of town.
You're never?
No.
I go out there every now and then, every so often. There's a couple of things.
Yeah.
But I'm going to try to do it, too. I need to get it done as well, but I have other things going on today. But don't forget to vote. Get it done now. There's early voting goes through this Saturday. There's not early voting on Friday because that's a holiday for Juneteenth. But early voting wraps up on Saturday. So just keep that in mind.
Coming up after the news, top of the hour, mm-hmm. former mayor and current Downtown Development Authority Director yep. Cedric Glover joining us. Going to talk about what he would like to see happen in downtown Shreveport
mm-hmm.
With Curtis Jackson's development.
Absolutely.
101.7 FM, 710keel.com.
Now more breaking news and trending talk with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
We got a message. World Cup is here, and I still don't care.
Shame on you. Shame on you.
I kind of get it.
You know how much is being pumped into the economy.
I know, it is. It's good, and I'm trying to... I'm not opposed to it. I've never watched. In fact, we turned on the USA Paraguay
mm-hmm.
game earlier a few days ago, and it was awesome to see the USA do well.
Sure, they look good.
But I'm telling you, I looked at my wife at one point. And went, oh, this is exciting, isn't it? Well, look, he kicked the ball. Now they're going the other way. Okay.
You don't understand the game.
I don't. And I'll be the first to admit.
It's a beautiful game.
I don't get the nuances. I don't understand the attraction.
Mm-hmm. I love football. Football.
Obviously, quite a few people do.
It's huge. It's huge. The tickets are hard to come by in all the markets. They're really tough to come by. It's just beautiful. And to watch Messi yesterday for Argentina. Score a hat trick. Three goals. He'll be 39, I think. He's coming up on his 39th.
Yeah.
He's played in the World Cup 20 years, and he scored a hat trick for crying out loud.
Dina said, wow, even the refs have to be in good shape.
Yes.
they never stop running either.
They run their hinies off. And, I was skeptical at first of the VAR, the review. But I like it now. I like where you can see, are they offsides? Was it really a goal? You know, the things that happen in soccer that you can look at. Was it a handball? I'm double checking.
I'm like Ted Lasso. Hey, ref, can you explain offsides?
Yeah.
No, seriously, can you explain it to me?
I get offside. I know all about soccer. I was a soccer mother. I mean, that's what we did. And I went all over the South with soccer tournaments and loved the game.
All right, explain offsides. Explain it to me like I'm seven.
Okay, offsides. If you get onto your offensive side of the field, okay?
That's across midfield.
Across midfield.
Okay.
You cannot be further down the field than the last defender. So you can't camp out by the goal and wait for them to pass you the ball.
Okay.
You have to be, a defender has to be between you and the goal, even a body part. If your elbow stretches across and you're ahead of the last defender, you're offsides. If the ball comes to you when you're in an offside position.
So what if a defender runs intentionally?
Oh, they do. They will run backwards.
Right.
To draw you offsides. So you got to stay with that last defender. If you're an offensive player, you got to stay with that very last defender and know not to get offsides. Now, the moment the ball's kicked, you can go ahead. You can go forward then. And then so if you're faster, you win that battle. So it's the nuances are very, and now with the VAR, they can zone in on it. And like last night, somebody's hand was in front of the last defender. His hand is the only thing in the offside position. He's offsides. That's what happened. And they called a goal back.
Is that the first player or?
Whoever, any offensive player cannot be the first guy between the goal and him. There has to be a defender with him, okay? If your hand reaches out beyond the last defender, you're in an offside position. That's as simple as I can make it. And to watch the VAR is good because they can hone in on it.
So what does VAR stand for?
Video review of something. Video. Yeah, that's
it. Look at me.
Look at you.
Figured it right out.
Figured all this stuff out. You're amazing.
Cedric Glover, speaking of amazing, joining us after the news top of the hour, Downtown Development Authority, going to share what he'd like to see Curtis Jackson develop with downtown Shreveport.
Mm-hmm.
101.7 FM, 710 Keel, Mike and McCarty. FM, 710 Keel, Mike and McCarty in studio. Former Shreveport mayor, now current director of the Downtown Development Authority.
Mm-hmm.
I got it right.
Yep.
Cedric Glover joining us. Cedric, good morning.
Good morning.
Get real close there.
Good morning.
Yeah,
good morning.
Real directional. Thanks for coming out.
Absolutely. Great to be here. Thank y'all for having me.
Now that the flood waters have subsided. Wow, that was exciting, wasn't it?
Very. A little power outage yesterday afternoon downtown as
well. Oh, boy. Curtis 50 Cent Jackson's in town. He's doing a fireside chat today at the convention center, 6 o'clock. Doors open at 4. This is a chance for people to ask their questions. Find out what his plan is. What are you most looking forward to hearing from him?
Just for him to be able to continue to detail and confirm to folks that what he is advancing is not a figment of our imagination. But it actually is a real vision that he has, decided that Shreveport is the place to unfold that, and that he is putting real resources behind to make happen. And as I continue to share with people, the part of this that I find most intriguing and most potential feel is that he's a 50-year-old man who speaks of this as his legacy. And when you get to a certain age and you start to reflect on what it is that you may end up leaving behind, and you happen to be a global icon with 121 million social media followers, and you say Shreveport is the place where I want to build at least a part of my legacy, then I think that's something that is exciting, potential field, and we are here waiting for it to unfold.
Mm-hmm.
We got a chance to talk with Orville Hall earlier this week, and you know, he said, look, it's happening. And he said something that I appreciate. He said, enjoy the process, because these things are happening. They're taking place. The first steps have been taken to build the dome, the sphere, if you will. And Millennium Studios is going to be redone. I mean, I'm looking forward to it.
Well, and the thing that I continue to focus on and stress is that go back to that original visit from February of 2023, where Mr. Jackson's question to Mr. Hall was, does Louisiana still have those film production tax credits? If they do, then I'm interested. And for me, despite all of the other things that layer on top of it, this still fundamentally goes back to productions, whether they be game shows, television shows, movies, whatever they may be. Those are the types of activities that those of us who were here 15 years ago remember being a significant part of the Shreveport-Bossier, Northwest Louisiana economy that helped to generate jobs, generate wealth, generate opportunity, and made us Hollywood South for a period of time.
Sure.
And so all the other glitter, the domes, and the humor and harmonies and everything else, that's all great for me. Give me a regular series of television, movies, and other types of productions that bring with them the kind of people, jobs, activities that comes with that, and we end up with a big win for Shreveport, Northwest Louisiana.
You are charged as the director of the Downtown Development Authority for making our downtown vibrant. So my question to you is, how actively involved are you in what he's planning, what he's proposing? Do you get briefed on these things? Do you see the plans? Like, do you know what he's planning to do with the 11 properties he's purchased?
Well, we speak.
Okay.
On an ongoing basis. And so I kind of, I guess, function as someone who, being from here, has insight on our history, the context of what's happening, kind of a sounding board in some respects, and obviously someone who's here to help support and facilitate and counsel and advise with regard to what it is that they're doing and how they're trying to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So has he shared ideas, anything you can share about any of the other properties, those 11 properties that he's invested in?
Well, the one thing that you do to ensure that he keeps sharing is to make sure you don't share what he shares with you on the radio.
Well, that's why I say anything that you can share.
Nothing that I would share at this point.
What would you like to see him do with the buildings?
Well, obviously, the thing that we want most in terms of downtown right now, understanding that we're never going to end up being the commercial center. No downtowns, especially post-pandemic, are going to go back to being the commercial centers that they've been for decades and decades. And so the ability to be able to convert previously commercial space and the residential space is our best path forward, because having people who live downtown, those walking wallets, is what gives us the ability to be able to support our existing restaurants, our existing retail, and continue to grow, develop, and advance downtown. So
who brings my question up very vividly then. If it's residential properties he's developing, who are the residents? Are they young people? Are they old people? Are they families? What does Cedric Glover hope it is?
It's a mix. You have in fact, in downtown Shreveport right now, you have everything from empty nesters who are extremely wealthy but enjoy the convenience of living downtown, and you have young people who are working as waiters and are part of the gig economy and are just getting a foothold on life and every other point that comes in between.
Families?
Yes.
Okay.
There's school buses that drop off children in downtown Shreveport.
Okay. Is there anything that you are skeptical about that you're like, I don't know, and we might want to pump the brakes on that? Do you see anything right now that is a red flag for you?
Like I said, if I've got a global icon with 121 social media followers who has said all roads lead to Shreveport, whatever it is that represents a potential problem or challenge is just an opportunity turned inside out.
Okay.
Now, he's already done that. Social media, he's talked about all roads lead to Shreveport. Have you seen any impact from that already?
I think if you talk about, what do they call it, earned media, I think if somebody would stop and put a pencil to that and think about the number of mentions, the amount of exposure and what have you that we've got for Shreveport in general, downtown in particular, I think it's probably pretty significant, pretty overwhelming. But again, understand, we're still in the very early stages of all of this. And unfortunately, what happened on Monday with the rain? The studio flooded.
Yes.
Right.
And so, you know, there are still hitches and glitches to this that still have to be worked out. And as I constantly remind people, one of the things that we have to be aware of is that doing things that are new, unprecedented, are hard to do. And so it's very easy to sit back and poke and be critical and what have you. But when you got someone who has come forward with the kind of vision that he and Mr. Hall have come forward with and have put in the kind of due diligence in terms of working with the state and others to be able to build up the support. That
and his own money, too.
And put in significant amounts. That's the most important part.
Right.
Yeah, in fact, that's the difference between my homeboy who comes to me and says, Cedric, I could have taken Millennium Studios for $200 a month.
Yeah.
Well, but I also tell him, but you can't pay the $10,000 electricity bill that's due next month.
Right.
So that's the difference.
Exactly.
So yes, this is an example of someone who has received some incentives, but is also advancing and matching and exceeding that with his own resources.
Mm-hmm. Millions of his own resources.
Yeah, absolutely.
Correct. Cedric Glover in studio. We've got to take a quick break. Mike and McCarty, 1017 FM, 710Keel.com.
Back with McCarty on 1017 FM and 710 Keel.
Director of the DDA, Cedric Glover, in studio, Micah McCarty. I know we're talking a lot about Curtis Jackson. I want to ask you just real quick, change gears for just a moment, and find out about the state building. How's it coming along?
Things are going extremely well. They are past the 50% completion point. I think we're going to end up delivering this thing early. The glass curtain is pretty much completely installed, except for the elevator side. That's going to be the last portion that they end up doing so they can continue to have access to it. They're now putting up the parking garage.
Wow.
Things are going great. Want to thank all the folks who helped to make that happen. My great friend, former Senator Robert Mills, helping to take the lead on it. Current State Representative Stephen Jackson was instrumental in helping us to get the additional funding we needed so we didn't have to do any value engineering on that project, and all the rest of the delegation. My good friend, Alan Seaball, who helped to sign that crucial letter that got us over the line back in 2022. So great, great progress on it. Like I say, probably is going to come in ahead of schedule, which also leads us to making sure that we're poised to properly repurpose the current state building.
Yes.
When it ends up being.
Yes.
Have some legislation in place that hopefully should help to guide that we'll be following up on.
That could be such a cool building.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes.
We're not tearing that down. We know that.
No.
It's a historic building.
Not only we're not tearing it down.
Right.
Yes, it has great value for its historic status. It was constructed way back in 1940 originally. Was expanded with that parallel to Jordan Street portion and made it a T back in 54. Same year they built the Hearst Coliseum. You have the interior walls. None of them are weight-bearing, so you have the ability to be able to move all of the interior walls
and
configure spaces in ways that can create, you know, obviously.
Talk
housing.
About residential.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Great windows, the lawn, the original fencing. You're talking about infusing what could be hundreds of people into that portion of Highland. You currently have underway the project. Again, Stephen Jackson helped to support and facilitate the Commercial National Bank building. From his time in the Louisiana Housing Corporation, that developer has gotten a green light that's going to turn that into housing. That project is currently, along with Barrett Street Elementary School, are both being converted. And so, yes, hopefully within the next couple of years, we'll have a chance to go through a process to select a development team that will be able to come in and convert that into hundreds of people living and working around what is currently the state building.
Let's talk the Red River District for just a minute.
I just wanted to say, that's in my notes as well. But talk about it being an infusion of life into downtown, bringing hundreds of workers in.
Absolutely. You're talking about 600 workers coming in.
Yes.
People who will come with that. I mean, and the thing that's most significant is you realize that building went into service in 1974. It was never owned by the federal government. They leased it. It was a 20-year lease.
The Jody Wagner building.
Jody Wagner building. By the end of 1994, it was empty. And it's been empty. And so you're talking about a building that's been empty a decade longer than it was ever in use.
Is it still going to be called that?
No.
We're keeping the name? We're changing the name? Okay.
Absolutely.
All right. Red River District. with regard to Curtis 50 Cent Jackson. The mayor would only tell us limited information the other day, saying that we're in discussions about possibly leasing a couple of the buildings down there. Is it a good idea for a third party to come in and run that entire district? You were mayor at the time. You know the city's involvement down there. Things are not good there. There are building problems, et cetera. What would you, as the director of the Downtown Development Authority, like to see happen in that district?
Well, first of all, help to communicate to people clearly so that we all understand that the Red River District was a flawed idea from the very beginning.
Oh, why so?
Because the idea
really
that you want to sell food, liquor, and entertainment directly across the street from an entity that gives away all of those things as an inducement to get people to come in and game means that you have a very challenging proposition. You're trying to make money at something that other people are giving away.
You're talking about the casinos.
I'm talking about the casino.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
And it's the realization that none of us really understood back in the early 1990s as we were going through that process, and that is the casinos are our friends in terms of attracting people to the area and the region. Once that happens, their objective, as an example, couples coming from Dallas with $5,000 to spend for the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we'd like to get about $1,000 of those $5,000 out into the economy.
Sure.
Come and shop, go to a museum, and what have you. The casino's mindset is that what? We want that $5,000 to come and park in front, take you to your room, show you to the tables,
mm-hmm.
let you leave with enough gas money to get back to Dallas so you can make some more and come back.
They don't want you out of their doors.
They don't want you out of their doors.
So they're doing everything they can to keep you there.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's interesting.
That's why the whole concept from the very beginning is one that was flawed.
So let's talk about what the concept should be for that district when we come back.
Absolutely. Cedric Glover in studio, Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710 Kiel, and on the free Kiel app.
Let's get back to the show with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Kiel.
Former Shreveport Mayor, Downtown Development Authority Director Cedric Glover in studio. Let's get this break knocked out and we'll have a longer segment after. 101.7 FM, 710 Kiel, Mike and McCarty.
More breaking news and trending talk with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Kiel.
Cedric Glover in studio, Mike and McCarty. Now, this is interesting, Cedric. Last segment before the news, you said that the Red River District is a flawed concept. I've never thought of it that way. I see what you're saying. I don't know that I 100% agree. Because, you know, a lot of families.
Then why has it never worked?
Well, no. Well, we could do an hour on that. but I'm not saying I disagree. It's interesting to me. So what would you like to see happen with the Red River District? What direction would you like it to go now?
I think the recognition that you're not going to succeed trying to figure out how to attract gamers across the street.
Restaurants and
so it, unless you end up, for instance, for those that are there right now, Cassandra's and Red River Social Bar and others, they are building their level of support from locals, from people who are from here,
mm-hmm.
And counting the people from out of town coming into the boats and what have you as the lane gap. But if you end up trying to figure out how you can effectively compete against a multi-billion dollar corporation that is giving away the very things that you're trying to make money off of, you're in a really, really challenging set of circumstances.
Is the Red River District, should it be focused on adults or families? If you had to wave your magic wand.
Well, I guess it depends upon, at this point, if you're talking about branding it with someone like Curtis Jackson, then obviously, you know, in terms of your evening and nighttime hours, that's adults. Could you also infuse something during the course of the daytime? It ends up making it something viable as well. That would be great as well.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, it's obviously in the entertainment quarter of our downtown. It's across the street from our casinos. It has Commerce Street on the other side. So it's right sandwiched in between the places that we want to attract people to come and have a good time. And so trying to say that it would be family focused would represent a bit of a challenge.
You know, you've got the aquarium mm-hmm. in that area. You've got Cyport Discovery Center. Maybe something along the lines of bringing families in, like you say, during the day, museums or more shopping or something that they can't get across the street?
Well, and again, all of those are things that obviously we're very impressed with the success of the aquarium. The kudos to the Tyler administration for stepping forward and helping make that happen. The 2011 bond issue, mm-hmm. Spent $1.5 million there to get that building as a clean slate, ready for repurposing. But, Cyport has challenges as well. And so the bottom line is the Red River District was intended to be an adult entertainment area. Being able to put that under the Curtis Jackson umbrella of branded spaces could be something that could be highly successful. I think he deserves an opportunity to be able to outline a vision for that, and we're waiting to hear the rest of it.
Describe what you know about what the G-Dome is going to be. We're hearing all this high-tech stuff.
Samsung.
We know what the temporary dome looked like. We know the size of that. What size comparison do you have in your brain for what is coming?
It'll be a 14-story structure, which will mean it will be as tall as the American Tower.
Holy cow.
So it will be as tall as, the many of the buildings that we have in downtown Shreveport right now. And will be wrapped in all of the latest technology that Samsung has to offer.
Mm-hmm. And the city's
a little green space to go around it.
Park. They're putting in a park. The city's also going to be able to put LED messages on it, I'm told. They've got certain amounts of time on it.
Yeah.
So if you have DDA messages or things that are happening.
Absolutely.
That's a huge game changer.
Again, we're talking about a global icon who's decided he wants to come to Shreveport to build his legacy project. That's something I think is an exciting opportunity. And most importantly, it translates into jobs, into opportunities, into wealth building, and a chance for us to be able to, once again, be able to say that we are Hollywood South.
You hearing anything about grocery stores, health clubs, a swimming complex, anything like that?
All of those are trailers. Okay. Retail is a trailing indicator. You have to have the people in order to be able to justify that. You don't go and say, I'm going to build a state-of-the-art grocery store or anything else of that nature until you know that within the service area that particular entity would look to support, that you've got sufficient numbers of people.
So, And by that, you're talking residential.
We're talking residential. That's mm-hmm. why we've got to continue to move forward with Petroleum Tower. We've got to continue to move forward with the Rubenstein Building. We've got to make sure that we end up getting some understanding with the Hakim so that we can get the Slattery Building and the Johnson Building and those others up and available and in the hands of people who know how to take them, convert them into residential properties, and get people into our downtown.
Let's address the elephant in the room, because we see this happen a lot where there are fights downtown. Those videos go viral. And people talk about, why would we go downtown? Is downtown Shreveport safe?
Downtown Shreveport statistically is one of the safest places, or is the safest place in Shreveport. But again, as I said to folks when I was mayor, perception is reality. Mm-hmm. And the only way in which you can shift the perception is to make sure that you don't have a reality that lines up and affirms people's perceptions. And so part of what we're doing, as you saw from several weeks ago, when we announced with the Anglin Myers Foundation that we have raised at this point $51,000 to be able to cover downtown from pillar to post with all the state-of-the-art cameras that we need and have them all linked to the real-time crime center. We're also going to be adding to that. There are only two license plate readers right now in downtown Shreveport. Obviously, those are near the casinos.
Mm-hmm.
You would obviously not want to have people coming out of the garages and what have you being victimized and not being able to find out who did that.
Right.
We need more of those. We've determined, based on our assessment, the recommendation is for 14. Hopefully, we'll be able to get those funded as well. But we want to be able to ensure that as you come into downtown and you're thinking about doing something that may be outside the norms of acceptability, know that we're going to have eyes trying to keep an eye on you,
mm-hmm.
so that we don't just end up responding, but that we end up proactively engaging.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Cameras are more of a reactionary measure, more of a response as opposed to proactive.
Well, it depends, because one of the things that we're also looking at from a staffing standpoint, have the possibility of being able to add additional personnel to go out and patrol downtown.
Right.
One of the things that our real-time crime center has the capacity to be able to do is to be able to have a person that would be designated to do nothing but watch the cameras that are within downtown. And we're talking about with our respective boards about potentially funding that so that on high, profile nights, say Thursdays through Sundays,
mm-hmm.
8 to 4 in the morning, You have a person that's there at the real-time crime center, and their bank of cameras are nothing but the cameras that are covering downtown. So that not only are you seeing what is happening, you're seeing what's developing. And then seeing what's developing is what gives you that proactive ability to be able to go out and diffuse those things before they actually happen. And having the awareness that those eyes and ears are there also has a deterrent effect in terms of what people are willing to do.
Because when Curtis did the Humor and Harmony and he did the Dome and he did events downtown, a lot of that success was attributed to the fact that he had a lot of additional security and police presence and security all around that area.
Absolutely. And that's obviously having a more proactive, more visible, more forward-leaning presence is a part of that, and obviously we're all in discussions in terms of how we help make that happen.
Shifting gears a little bit, we lost quite a public servant, John Hussey, former mayor, served two terms. You and he were probably very well acquainted. Share your thoughts about John Hussey with us.
One of the greatest Shreveporters to have ever lived. So glad that I had a chance to be able to get to know him, to call him my friend. If you're one of the folks right now who's taking advantage of some of the expanded air service that Shreveport has to offer, you should tip your hat and give thanks to him, because in 2010, he accepted my request that he chair our air service review committee that came up with a series of recommendations that ultimately resulted in the Regional Air Service Alliance being put before the voters, being funded, and that gave us those pool of dollars that Tim Wilhite and those folks are using right now to go out and work with the Airport Authority Board and the Executive Director to be able to go out and maintain and expand and increase the level of air service that we have in Shreveport. Mayor Hussey came along at a time when Shreveport needed a mayor that had the ability to be able to bridge multiple aspects of this community and keep it together. I think probably his best moment was in 1988, with what happened out in Cedar Grove, when you had a lot of people, especially within the police department, who wanted to go out and basically shoot and kill people because of what happened. And instead of allowing that to happen, he said that we're going to set a perimeter around that location, understand that we've got people who are focused on their emotions right now. We're going to allow those emotions to burn themselves out, and we're not going to end up with any more loss of life in Shreveport tonight.
And referencing and the Cedar Grove riots.
Yes. I watched that, and his calm during that was a game changer for me. I was a youngster back then, but he stayed calm. He pulled the city back from from a real bad. You've got a big event going on in downtown. When we get back, I want to talk about it, because something about free lunch or something.
Lunch and Discover.
Oh, I want to hear about that.
Cedric Glover in studio, Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710 Keel.
Big stories of the day with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Former Shreveport mayor and current executive director of the Downtown Development Authority, Cedric Glover, in studio, Mike and McCarty.
You've got an event to attract folks downtown. It's a lunch event. Tell us about it.
Lunch and Discover series. We're building on the great success of an effort that Jamie Landry, our deputy director, and Lauren Davidson started called Lunch on Us, where for a series of weeks we were giving away 100, I think 50 at a time, coupons to go to downtown restaurants for lunch. And looking at that, I said it would be great to be able to expand this. And we ended up getting an appropriation of state funding, thanks to Representative Jackson and our DSDC board, matched that $25,000 with some additional. And we said, well, one, let's increase the voucher from $10 to $12.50. Let's add in our retailers and do gift certificates for them. And so those are $25. Let's be able to not just give those away, but be able to raffle them off. We gave away 50 at a time. Today we're going to raffle off at least 36.
Okay.
And let's also feature one of our downtown restaurants with a tasting table. So we give them a budget and say, look, we're not looking to try to feed everybody, but we want you to lay out a spread that people can come and sample from and be able to say, if that tastes that good, let me go get a whole one from you guys.
And where is that happening today?
That's happening today.
Where?
400 Texas Street.
Okay.
In the what started life 50 years ago as the First National Bank Tower. We're also going to be celebrating their 50th anniversary. That was a big part of the bicentennial. That building, 400 Texas Street, was the beginning of the modern skyline of Shreveport.
Yeah.
Those broad shoulders that you see in our silhouette right now started with that building. Everything else that followed from Louisiana Tower, American, and Regents, but the very first big, broad-shouldered building in downtown Shreveport was the First National Bank Tower. We're going to be there today helping to celebrate that, sharing, giving out gift certificates, lunch vouchers. We'll be hearing from the management of the building and some of the tenants that are there talking about some of the spaces that are available to
come
in. Is
that noon?
It starts at 10 o'clock.
10 o'clock. Okay,
right.
Good.
We have live music.
Going.
Winston's, Winston Hall will be giving us music. Well, the music starts at 10:30. We'll have some short presentations, lots of giveaways, good food. Our friends at Robertson Produce are going to come out and lay out a whole table of free produce for people to come and sample.
Wow.
And so we're going to look to do these probably about every other week between now and the end of the year.
Okay.
You know what I miss downtown?
In various locations throughout downtown.
Yeah.
You know what I miss downtown?
What?
And this is going to sound silly. The CNB clock.
Oh, yeah.
Up on the top of the tower. The time and temp. That was so awesome.
Our last 30 seconds. Thank you for Knight Street. I'm just going to leave it there. Finally done, Cedric.
Yeah, shows right. You what happens when you get the lowest bidder.
Yeah, boy, does it ever. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you all for having
me. Let's do it again.
Always a pleasure. Cedric Glover in studio. Micah McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710 Q.